Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on the Nothing But Net channel. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. New text and voicemail line, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Leave all your voicemails, your texts while you're listening to the show. Make sure you're saving that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. You can interact with us while you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. Our listeners have done a fantastic job with this. So once again, 331-979-1369. If you're a brand new listener to the show, it's easy. The text messages take seconds. You can interact with us, and it helps us to understand not only what you guys are feeling, but interacting and also getting the topics that you guys want to hear about. So hit us up there at 331-979-1369. So Matt and I decided that we're going to spend this entire episode doing mailbag because we've got a handful of voicemails to play for you guys. This is going to be a loaded mailbag for you guys going across a ton of different topics. But the first thing I wanted to ask you real quick, Matt, is did you get a chance at all to hear Nate Robinson doing color analyst last night on TNT?
No, I missed that. I missed that Rockets Blazers game, unfortunately. I love his podcast with Boozer. I think it's fantastic, but doing color commentary on TV is an entirely different beast. And I mean, Nate's a personable guy, and he clearly knows basketball well, but I don't know. I mean, like, what was the general consensus of people watching that game on Twitter? Like, did people think he did a good job?
Yeah, I think there was times where I thought he had a pretty solid, you know, level of fun entertainment to the broadcast. I think it's hard for guys to just jump straight on there, and there's a certain level of there's a certain level of flow that I feel like a NBA broadcast needs, and that's more work on just the regular broadcaster who's doing the play-by-play. I thought Nate Robinson was all right in spurts. It's very difficult to just hop on a two-hour game and try to incorporate not only analyst of what you're seeing on the court, but, you know, bring up those stories and things that you can relate to the game. And so I think with a little bit of work and if he puts in the time and practices this, I think he could be pretty solid at it. And you know, he adds the entertainment value that I think a lot of NBA fans, especially younger fans, and like you said, anybody with a really good personality doing broadcasts, I think can pick it up pretty quickly. Last night wasn't great, but I wasn't expecting a whole lot just because he's never done this before. He just started up a podcast. So at times he brought entertainment to there, but there was times where he was going off on tangents and it's going to happen. And it kind of brought away from the game that was actually going on the floor, which, by the way, was a phenomenal game and hopefully a preview of maybe what we'll see if the Warriors get knocked off with the 1-3 seeds with the Rockets and the Trailblazers. That was a really good game last night. But I just had to ask and see if you caught that at all. If anybody out there caught that at all either and had some thoughts on Nate Robinson's car, Anna, hit us up on the text line or at social media. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. But Matt, I want to spend this entire time doing mailbag questions. So let's. I'm going to let you kick it off with the first question of the day.
All right, let's do it. This one comes to us from Twitter, from Asish. He says, what do you guys think about Jabari Parker to the Bulls? Article came out today saying he was almost traded at the deadline. His time in Milwaukee is all but done. Jordan, I know you and I have occasionally, you know, dipped our toe into the what if Jabari Parker to the Bulls pool. I'll let you take this one first. What do you think about it?
Okay, so that's interesting because I wonder, I didn't see this article come out, but I'm wondering if that article was written before Jason Kidd was ousted in Milwaukee or if that was after, because I know there was this big storyline going on between Jabari Parker and Jason Kidd and how there was a disconnect there and the way he was going through treatment and trying to come back and what, I guess, the way things were tailored in for the Bucks and the relationship wasn't working. So I figured once Jason Kidd was out and they brought in a new coach, that was pretty much telling me, okay, seems like the front office still likes Jabari Parker a lot. They're going to throw money at him. He's played really well since being healthy. That's the problem. That's the biggest problem of it all, though, is he can't stay on the floor because he hasn't been healthy. But I just have a hard time imagining the Bucks just letting him go for nothing. He's going to probably command a decent level of money for a long contract, and I don't know why the Bucks wouldn't want to tie him up. I guess the injury problems are something to be worried about in throwing a lot of money at him. In terms of the Bulls, I think he would be a fun option if you can get him at the right price. I'm not saying to throw, you know, anywhere between 18, 20, 15, 20, 12 and 20 million dollars at Jabari Parker, but I mean, maybe you can get him on a short-term deal to figure out maybe a play and see if you can stay healthy. That would be a lot of fun, but I'm not saying unload the bank on Jabari Parker. I think his game in terms of what he's done when he's healthy has been a lot of fun. There was that one game, I believe a few weeks ago against the Cavaliers, where he was just knocking down shots left and right, and he was part of the reason why the Bucks had ended up beating the Cavaliers in that game. So I'm not opposed. I'm very worried about the injuries, though, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of money on a guy that has had ACL surgeries already, because you're already going to be spending money on a guy that has an ACL surgery this summer in Zach LaVine.
And just in case our Lockdown Bulls listeners want to check it out, I found the article that Asish was referring to. It's from Clutch Points, clutchpoints.com, and the source is somebody from the Racine Journal Times, who is close to Parker and his family, saying that slim to none he's returning to Milwaukee, and that he was nearly traded at this season's deadline, and that was because of the fallout he had with their former coach Jason Kidd, who was apparently tough on Parker while he was, you know, dealing with his recovery from the second ACL injury. So personally, I don't, you know, I know there's the Simeon connection, the Chicago kid thing, and I mean to me it's just apparently Parker also is still, you know, trying to get a max deal of sorts, you know, a 4 or 5 year deal worth upwards of $100 million, and I'm sorry, with the injury concerns that come with him, signing Zach LaVine to a long-term deal this summer is its own worry that the Bulls have in front of them. I think adding Parker to a big deal, even though the Bulls are one of a few teams coming into this summer that will actually have the space to sign a guy to a contract like that, I just don't think it's a good
idea. So there was another report, too, just to kind of go off of that. Earlier in October, when the Bucks and Jabari Parker were trying to come to a negotiation or come to terms on a deal, the Bucks made him a contract offer of $54 million over 3 years, and he said no to that. So just put that as your litmus test of what he's going to be asking for this summer. He's probably going to get more. He's probably going to get more than 3 years at $54 million, which puts you at what? What is that? Quick math, 16, 17 million a year. I'm cool with staying away from that, especially if you're going to unload the bank on Zach LaVine this summer.
Hey, Jordan. Hey, Matt. Loyal listener from Connecticut here since the Sean and Cody days. Just want to first say that I love the show. It's College Prospects Talk lately. And I just want to chime in with my thoughts on centers and defense. So my dream for the Bulls right now would be to get the sixth pick with Mohamed Bamba. I mean, I feel like the defensive capability that he has could really fit well with the pace and space that Fred Hoiberg wants to work. And then, you know, with the eighth pick, Wendell Carter, I feel like that also could do something.
All right, so he's asking about Mohamed Bamba and just some of the prospects that the Bulls might be interested in coming up this summer. And we've talked back and forth. I think Matt and I have gone back and forth between either a big guy, a guard, or a wing. Seems like the Bulls need wings very desperately, and that might be what they're leaning towards more. And it's going to depend on what's taken at the top of the draft, too. You've got a lot of guys that have a lot of volatility. In everything that leads up to the NBA draft, you see guys move all around, but more specifically, he seemed excited about Mohamed Bamba and just wanted to give you Mohamed Bamba's college stats. So he played in 30 games, started 29 for Texas this year. He averaged 12.9 points per game, 10.5 rebounds, 3.6 blocks per game, about a half an assist and a half a steal. He was shooting 60.3% from two-pointer, and his field goal percentage was 54.1%. I really like this. I actually dove pretty deep into Mohamed Bamba's some of the mixtapes people were making of him, his offensive defensive strengths and weaknesses, and YouTube does a really good job, and especially Draft Express. Really wish Draft Express would have stayed free and not behind an ESPN paywall, but I digress. But the one thing that I have about Bamba's game is that he is very, very raw. Like, we're talking about like Thon Maker raw, like maybe a little bit more experienced than maybe what Thon Maker had coming into the league. I'm not denying the guy's length, his size, his ability to guard all five positions and move around the perimeter. His defense is fantastic. The one thing that I have a huge worry about is him being able to put the ball in the basket, which, I mean, for this Bulls team, you really, like, you've got three guys on this team that are potentially supposed to be your scoring options. So that shouldn't be the biggest concern, especially for a big guy that can defend the way Bamba can. But I like him. I just don't think he's going to be around at the place that the Bulls are going to be drafting between 7 and 10. You have any thoughts about Mohamed Bamba?
For the most part, I agree with you, Jordan. Obviously, the thing you like most about this kid is the raw athleticism and his freakish, you know, 7'9", nearly 7'10 wingspan. I mean, that is insane. And having a guy like that protecting the rim, particularly on a Fred Hoiberg team where, you know, that's certainly not been a specialty of this team as of late, and it would obviously be a big help to the Bulls down low. And Robin Lopez, to his credit, is a decent rim protector, and you said in yesterday's show, I think, that he's probably going to be around again next season unless the Bulls get some kind of dynamite offer for him that they can't refuse leading up to the draft, and I would agree with you, but I don't think he's a part of the long term as far as the Bulls' plans, despite how much they like him, just because age-wise, he doesn't really fit into the mold. I would love to have Bamba. If he was best available on the board where the Bulls are picking, absolutely. There's obviously a certain ceiling to what he can do in the league offensively. Obviously, he can destroy rims with dunks and is a great guy rolling to the rim. But you know, the technical skills that he has on the offensive end are pretty limited right now, and he's never projecting to be a floor spacer of any kind at the NBA level. But I agree with you also in that I would be pretty surprised if, say, the Bulls are picking 7th or 8th or 9th. I would be pretty surprised if Bamba's still on the board, even at 7.
One of those top guys wasn't on the board. The Bulls are probably going to look at a wing more so than anything else in this draft. But certainly I love Mohamed Bamba's game, and the dude is just insanely long and insanely athletic. So I would be a fan if the Bulls drafted him.
Absolutely, as would I. All right, let's move on to our next one. This comes to us on our text line from JR. This is a fun one, Jordan. I can't wait to hear your answers. I've got a couple of good ones. JR says, hey guys, in your personal opinion, what is the best, most memorable Bulls game you have attended? Maybe give me your top two. Mine are, and this is JR, Game 6 against Boston in 2009, the triple OT thriller. Obviously, I mean, I'm so jealous. I wish I could have been at that game. I remember watching that game, and it's one of my favorite Bulls games that's ever happened in the history of the franchise. So happy for JR that he was there. And then 1994 Eastern Conference Semis, Game 6, Bulls hold their own against New York, forcing a Game 7. That's the game where Pippen had that insane facial dunk on Ewing and then also walked over to Spike Lee and told him to take a seat because Spike Lee was, you know, up yelling and doing Spike Lee things. So those are two pretty great ones that JR got to go to. Jordan, what one or two games stand out for you as favorite Bulls games you've attended?
So, yeah, I remember this one as it was down in Indianapolis. It wasn't even at the United Center. It was against the Pacers and Bulls. This is when the Pacers had that scrappy squad with Roy Hibbert and Lance Stephenson the first time around. They had Danny Granger. Like, the Pacers were very competitive, and this was a team with Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose. I think this was a whole lot of fun to watch. This was my first real experience of being able to watch Derrick Rose live and in person, and it was a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch the guy. I mean, like, so I just remember this was a night where Derrick Rose cooked the Pacers, and Roy Hibbert had like an insane amount of blocks in this game too. It was like 7 or 8. It was ridiculous. Derrick Rose had dropped 30 or 32 in this night, and the Bulls had ended up winning. But the highlight of the game was actually a buddy of mine who was with us at the game. We were sitting up in the, I wouldn't really call it a 300 level at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. It's not really a, a 300 level. It's more of like a mid 200s level, but he was a big enough idiot. He threw a lighter onto the court, and he had actually gotten on ESPN's top plays for throwing a lighter, and it ended up sliding all the way to the Bulls bench, like tossing it from the 200 level. So, I remember that because we came home and we saw it on ESPN and it was like, oh my God, you're an idiot. I can't believe you didn't get kicked out. But pretty funny. Like I said, though, there's a handful of guys in the NBA that I would I would urge people, if you have the chance and the opportunity, to go see. Derrick Rose was definitely one of those guys. Too bad it's not prime Derrick Rose anymore, but LeBron's still out there and you can go still see him. And I highly suggest everybody does.
Definitely. That's a good one. That's definitely, I remember the first couple of times that I got to see D Rose play live, and it, you know, for as fun as he was to watch on TV, seeing it up close and in person was you know, truly a spectacle. Speaking of which, one of my two favorites of recent Bulls history, I guess, although now it doesn't feel that recent, game one of the 11 Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, I'm always counting my lucky stars that I decided to go to that game. It was right before I left Chicago and moved to LA. My good friend slash roommate and I were like, you know what? We're about to move to the West Coast. The Bulls are in this deep playoff run. Like, we got to go. Like, we're trying to be, you know, mindful of our budget, and we're about to drive across the country and we have all these moving expenses, but like, to hell with it. We're going to game one. And what a game it was to go to. Obviously being the only game the Bulls won in that series against Miami in 2011, but they won it in dominant fashion. It was neck and neck for most of the first half, and then the Bulls pulled away in the second, ended up winning by like 20 or more than 20. But it was the game that had both of those insane Taj Gibson dunks. You know, the one on the fast break where he just completely facialized Dwayne Wade, and then the putback dunk late in the fourth quarter that just, I mean, sent the madhouse into a frenzy. So much fun stuff about being in the UC for that game. I mean, it was hyped up in there. And then favorite number one of all time, game one of the 1997 NBA Finals. Jordan hits a buzzer beater for the win off the left elbow over Brian Russell. Just does like this super dramatic, intense MJ fist pump right after he hits it. Like, yeah, I knew that was going in. He's swarmed by Pip, Judd Bushler, Randy Brown, Rodman. The place went nuts. And the thing that made it even better is that that was the setup for MJ hitting that buzzer beater was Karl Malone was at the free throw line and could have given Utah a lead, could have really, you know, put a huge amount of pressure on the Bulls. Malone goes to the free throw line and bricks two free throws. And then the Bulls take timeout side out of bounds, and MJ gets the inbounds pass, goes ISO, sinks it for the win. And then Pippen had that great line after the game, which was, I guess the mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays, because it was a Sunday night game. so, yeah, I mean, that might be all-time favorite Chicago sporting event of any. I mean, Cubs World Series definitely you know, pretty tough to beat too. But seeing MJ hit a buzzer beater in an NBA Finals game, I don't know if I'll ever see anything like that, cool as that, in person.
We're going to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us.
Listen up, Bulls Nation. Is your bracket already busted? Don't worry. There's still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you haven't signed up yet, it's not too late. It doesn't matter if you've been a player and fan for years, or you just like a team because their colors match your favorite shoes. Just lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join me and thousands of other players online and start betting at mybookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Join MyBookie today. That's why I'm telling you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay, fast, easy, without any hassles. Honestly, you're wasting your time betting anywhere else. MyBookie even has in-game live betting, so you can place a bet or bets after the tip-off. Join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's LOCKEDONNBA. Visit mybookie.ag today. Play, win, get paid.
Hey guys, this is Shobit Roy speaking from Dallas, Texas, lifetime Bulls fan. Love your guys' podcast. Called because I wanted to share my opinion on something I saw on ESPN. I saw coverage of the Cavs and Bulls game, and all they could do is talk about LeBron and what LeBron did and the Cavs and show LeBron highlights. And it's like, okay, I get it. You know, the nation wants to know what's going on with the Cavs, what's going on with LeBron and his big blocks and his big dunks. And they barely squeaked by the Bulls and beat them by, you know, 5 to 10 points. And it's like a statement win for the Cavs. Like, that doesn't even make sense. And LeBron James posted a triple-double. Like, okay, good job. You know, you posted a triple-double against, like I said, second and third string players. You should be doing that. You're the greatest player in the earth. Like, that's your job. You should be... That's not surprising. You do that, go do that against Golden State, and it's like, yeah, that's newsworthy. You beat Golden State, and it's like, yeah, that's a statement win. Beating the Bulls is not a statement win. And the second problem with this is they never cover normal day-to-day players that the general public would not know. No one knows Denzel Valentine unless you're a Bulls fan. Point basically was that we never see up-and-coming players because ESPN, the source for sports news for the general public, never lets us know of other players who have breakout games once in a while, which eventually leads to a player being, you know, one of the best, being an all-star. And, yeah, that's just my problem with ESPN. And I think it feeds into me disliking LeBron, even though I've learned and matured to respect him now. But it's... I think I hate ESPN more than I hate LeBron. I think that's the problem. Anyways, you guys do a great job. Love listening to this show. You know, it's people like you guys where you can actually get real news rather than ESPN just throwing baloney about LeBron and Steph and Trae Young all day rather than, you know, some actual sports news that I want to hear.
So I had to laugh at this one, Matt, because this is exactly what I was talking about on Twitter yesterday. So it's fitting that we're bringing this up now, but... The overall anger about how mainstream media in general covers the NBA, and I feel like if you're using the mainstream media such as Fox Sports or ESPN, CBS, any of those major platforms, you're going to be disappointed if you're looking for that in-depth coverage of an off-space team or a team that's tanking. I can understand your frustrations with the broadcast and not being maybe more heavily involved in what the Bulls were trying to do this year, especially because it's been so quiet. It's funny that they were quick to just put Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic's fight up everywhere and anywhere you could possibly put it on there for clicks or views or whatever. But you're right in some capacity, and I feel like as a Chicago Bulls fan, a lot of the other fan bases will probably tell us to shut the hell up because we've gotten all the coverage and more when Derrick Rose was here, when Michael Jordan was here, and some of those other teams, even if they make the playoffs, they don't get huge coverage. So I can understand the feeling, and don't take it out on LeBron. It's not LeBron's fault that he gets coverage everywhere, and that's crazy coming from me. But I'm with you. I've matured more, and I've appreciated LeBron, and I've watched LeBron, and I've realized that the reason why I feel like a lot of people are so angry or were so angry at the time with LeBron, it wasn't more about what he was saying, but it was just the oversaturation of LeBron James coverage. And this is what I was talking about with Trae Young. Like, now over the course of the last week, ESPN has been showing, you know, brick shots, and is Trae Young really going to be anything in the NBA? After two months ago, they were comparing him to Steph Curry, and they were so quick to show us.
Yeah, some people still are.
Yeah, and they were so quick to show us all the 45 plus footers that, you know, Trae Young was knocking down, and we had to watch Oklahoma play twice on ESPN a week for two straight months. Like, That's where I think I get the most frustrated with mainstream media, is that we just get so much content jammed down our throats about one single person or one individual that's making a bunch of noise. This happened to the Ball family too, in some capacities. And like, this is where I think a lot of people get their hate and their anger from. And then a lot of these places do a complete 180, and it's kind of ridiculous. It's frustrating, and I can understand the frustration. Matt, I don't know if you've kind of noticed this with any other players, but how do you feel about this? Like, when people take something and they're just gonna ram content down your throat until you're so sick of it that you hate him.
I think we're talking about different situations here. I mean, I don't think you can use ESPN giving a bunch of coverage of the LeBron-led Cavs, who are a giant, you know, soap opera story by themselves, and say, oh, that's so frustrating, and it's kind of annoyingly similar to what they're doing with Trae Young or what they're doing with the Ball family. No, there is an unlimited, an infinite amount of coverage of LeBron James and the Cavs because, as a team, they are trying to get to the finals for a four straight year. There's been all kinds of drama within the team. They had a huge roster overhaul at the trade deadline, and they are, despite not being the one seed, still largely being picked to come out of the East. And LeBron James is LeBron freaking James. Look, I've had plenty of times and opportunities to voice my certain critiques of LeBron James the player, LeBron James the person, but there is zero doubting, zero negating, zero arguing with the fact that he is the most watchable, polarizing player in the NBA right now. He is the king of the NBA. And even though he's older, you know, getting older, 33 years old, look at the numbers he's putting up this season. He really hasn't slowed down. He is still, you know, there are others waiting in the wings. It's, you know, Kevin Durant's a few years younger. Steph Curry's a little bit younger. Then there's guys like Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo that will be taking over the league when LeBron is done. But LeBron's not done. So, I mean, you can't complain about ESPN and Fox and CBS and all these major sports media, you know, companies putting a whole lot of coverage on LeBron James, because that's like complaining that they spent too much time covering Michael Jordan. Yes, there is a more deeply saturated amount of sports media coverage these days because of Twitter and other social media, and it's not just SportsCenter on loop on ESPN. There's a bunch of other stuff and a bunch of talking heads giving their opinions, but it's LeBron freaking James. So yeah, they're going to talk about him. To me, that's totally different than oversaturating with somebody like Trae Young, who makes a bunch of three-pointers on a bad college team, or the Ball family, which we all know how I feel about them.
Stay in your lane.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, too. I agree with the sentiment that, like, you have to cover the best player to walk this planet since Michael Jordan. Like, it's
one last thing. If Bulls fans out there are upset that they're spending too much time covering LeBron and the Cavs and not enough time covering the Bulls on a national scale, I'm sorry. Take your medicine. What the hell is wrong with you? Do you like why do you think they would be covering this Bulls team? No, they're not relevant this year.
But I can understand the frustration of not the balance of giving us both sides of teams, especially when you're watching a game on TV and it's sort of lopsided. So I can understand from that standpoint. But you're right. I said this about Steph Curry, too. Like, they did this with Steph Curry, especially early on with this Golden State Warriors team. He went from like, which everybody loved what he was doing in the first couple of seasons. When he really started to take off, that's when we really got content shoved down our throats. And it was just every single day and every single article was just about Steph Curry. And it was Steph Curry this and Steph Curry that. And here's a video of Steph Curry golfing. And here's a video of Steph Curry laughing in his house. Like, that's to the point where we got to love. And then once we got the content of just literally every day, it was just videos and talking heads just repeating the same things. That's when you turn on a lot of these athletes and they get people to hate them. And like I've said this, that Steph Curry is such a clear example of this happening because people got so oversaturated with the content that was out there. And this is partly the internet's fault, too. You see it every day on the internet, and then you go to TV and you see the same thing playing there. So I can understand the frustration of oversaturation with content, and you want to see a little bit more of diversity. My opinion to you, go listen to Locked On Podcast Network. I mean, there's coverage for every single team out there. We have an NBA draft podcast that's hosted by Josh Lloyd, and he does a great job, too. So use all of those resources you have. Use your own resources on the internet where you can find these sub-blogs that just specifically talk about your team. The Bulls have a ton of those out there. So there's a lot of different avenues you can go to just get the content that you want to hear. And maybe that's why ESPN's getting a lot of cords cut and people are stopped watching cable TV because they can get their content right on the internet about what they want in a specific market.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. By all means, if you are sick of the main headline, you know, clickbaity stuff and, you know, all the overload of video content that people are putting out there, and you want good writing and interesting new opinions in podcast form, Locked On is the place to be. Check out FanRag Sports while you're at it. All right, Jordan, let's do another one from Twitter. This comes from our guy, Jimmy. What's up, Jimmy? Why are you guys so against picking up IT in free agency? I'm assuming it's his reputation for being a locker room distraction, but don't you think he could be great for us? I've always been a fan and would love to see him in a Bulls uni. Maybe I'm letting my heart rule my head. Jordan, I'll let you take that one first.
Yeah, you're letting your heart rule your head, dude. I mean,
sorry, Jimmy.
I'm sorry, and you might love IT, and there are a lot of fans out there, but like, I'll give you two reasons right off the bat. One, he said he's not coming off the bench for any team that he signs with in the offseason, so if the Bulls signed him, could you imagine what that defensive scheme would look like with Isaiah Thomas and Zach LaVine on the floor? Like, the Bulls would be giving up 150 points a night. So he's going to ask for way too much money. He doesn't fit any of the timeline that the Bulls are trying to use. It was like what the Bulls tried to squeeze out of Dwayne Wade. Like, they asked him early on when he signed, would you come off the bench for us? I think your role would be a lot better. You would be a lot better for the team in terms of efficiency. And he didn't want to do that. And so he didn't. And this is the same thing with IT. IT is going to go to a team that that is going to allow him to start, allow him to do his thing. And that's basically case closed. Like, I don't want that around our locker room. Like, a lot of people bag on Rajon Rondo for being a bad locker room guy, or DeMarcus Cousins for being a bad locker room guy. Look at what he's done with the Cavaliers and now in Los Angeles picking fights. Like, it's just not a good thing, and I don't want it anywhere near any of these young guys that are trying to potentially build a championship team here. Like, that's the very last thing the Bulls need to deal with next season.
Yeah, I agree. And on top of the potential locker room problems issue, I just don't know if he can have a season like the one he had in Boston again in a different place with a different roster. obviously he's a huge liability on the defensive end, and I don't know if we're going to ever see that kind of offensive dominance and production that we got from him when he had that surprise, you know, late run at an MVP candidate kind of guy in his last season in Boston. I mean, kudos to him. That was a great season. It was really fun to watch him, especially, you know, he had that, you know, that stretch where he was Mr. Fourth Quarter and he was taking over all those games late. And I think to a certain point, and whether it's, you know, LeBron shutting down Derrick Rose in the playoffs or Isaiah Thomas and people figuring him out, unless you are Steph Curry levels of talented, undersized guards in the NBA can only be dominant for such a stretch until teams figure out how to shut them down. And that's just the nature of the beast, and it's playing in a league dominated by large, strong, muscular men with long, you know, with long wingspan. If you are an undersized guard and you have certain, you know, tricks up your sleeve to, you know, to become a premier level scorer, that only lasts for so long. And I think that we've already seen the best from Isaiah Thomas, and I think it would be a waste of money to sign him.
Yeah, look, I'm not trying to bag on Isaiah Thomas at all, especially because I think he's gotten the shit end of the stick over the last 12 months. Being forced to play in a playoff series that ultimately ended up getting him shipped out of Boston, a place that he loved, a place that he came up and became this star. Like, I can understand the frustrations and the saltiness from him in that point, and the kind of the backstabbing from Danny Ainge, and using that as a reason why he did trade for Kyrie. Like, you can't, but you also can't be mad that Boston Celtics traded for Kyrie. But for Isaiah Thomas's standpoint, like, having to make this comeback, you were supposed to make all your money this summer, you wouldn't have played in that playoff series had you known that the Celtics were going to trade you. Like, I can understand all the levels of anger that Isaiah Thomas would have this season, especially trying to come back from an injury. So I get it from both sides, and I guess I won't use all 1 year of seeing this as my litmus test for a bad locker room guy, so I wouldn't peg him as that. I just don't want any chance of that happening around this locker room, because, like, we just, that is the very last thing the Bulls need. All right, this one comes all the way from Fremont, California in the Bay Area. So this goes off a conversation that I had late last week, Matt, on a solo pod here, talking about autograph hawking and players getting videoed of not signing autographs for little kids and just that whole discussion. And so this is playing off of that. I've never actually seen a video of a player blowing off a young fan, but I imagine that if it does happen, adults got to be adults. In that if their child gets blown off, they should do their best to comfort their kid and just explain as best as that they can that sometimes players have too much going on to sign for every fan. Unless it's obvious that's not the case, then maybe you can decide what you want to tell your kids. I feel fine about it happening sometimes, as long as it's obvious the player makes a legitimate effort to do some signings sometimes. Otherwise, I'm not sure. So, Matt, he basically says that, like, he can understand it from the perspective of fans who are disappointed or children that are disappointed. My question to you is, does it frustrate you that all of a sudden I'm starting to see these videos more and more? I saw one with Steph Curry. We saw the one where the kid was asking for Steph Curry's autograph pregame. This one came from Larry Nance walking. I'm not sure what campus it was on. It looked like a college campus. He was walking through like a quad. He had his headphones in and a little kid ran up to him to try to get an autograph. But there was other people following him too. He kind of just shook the kid off and just didn't do anything. It looked like he was going somewhere. So how do you feel about this whole thing? Because I am getting this slow irritation that people are very quick to pull out their phone and start videotaping when this happens, and I don't think that's necessarily fair to the athlete.
No, I mean, it's not fair to judge the athlete. I mean, whether or not you want to, like, record a video of your kid going up to a celebrity athlete to ask them for an autograph, whether or not they oblige, and then you want to take that video and throw it up on social media, like, I guess that's your right to do that if you want, but I don't think people have a right to be butthurt about it. I mean, obviously, there are certain players and certain celebrities who have a reputation for being more or less willing to offer their time to fans, talking with them, giving them autographs upon request, you know, a high five, a quick fist bump as they're walking down the tunnel at halftime or after a game. As a fan who has attended several sporting events and not just games, but practices and training camp things and all that kind of stuff and spring training, anywhere where there's a group of athletes and a group of fans, and the fans want autographs. Some fans, you know, some athletes spend more time signing than others, and that's just that's how it works. But if every athlete obliged upon every request for a selfie or an autograph or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they would have no time to themselves. They would have no time to practice the sport that they play that it made them the celebrity that they are. It's insane. It's asinine to assume that athletes should, you know, fulfill on those requests every single time. And if, you know, the question is more geared towards the, this is becoming a bigger trend of people throwing up videos on social media of, hey, this is, you know, this athlete turned me down when I went to ask him for an autograph, or when my kid went to ask him for an autograph. Like, okay, like, so what? So what are you saying? At this particular time, on this particular day, this athlete didn't have time to, you know, pause what they were doing and sign an autograph and chat for a few minutes. So what? So what? You know, bad luck for you. Try him again next time. I mean, it's silly to me that people are mad about that kind of
thing. Yeah, I get frustrated when the player looks in the wrong in the situation. You know, like, from a 30-second video, you don't get the whole perspective from both sides. Like, you don't get what was going on in where the person was going. And in this case, Larry Nance, it looked like he was going somewhere, whether it was going to practice or to meet somebody. And, like, people were following him. Like, they were chasing him with pictures and stuff to autograph, trying to get a picture with him. Like you said, they've got places to go. And, like, imagine in your life if somebody came up to you every 5-6 minutes and interrupted you to take a picture, to talk, or to sign an autograph. It'd be cool for a while, but then it'd get annoying. So I think there's a time and a place, and I feel like these videos sometimes depict athletes, and especially when they get shared virally, they get shared across the internet and they go viral. I take a look at it and I just kind of get disappointed. I'm like, unless the guy just, like, told your kid to F off or did something completely rude, like, I just feel like it doesn't warrant a video for you to be upset to post to Facebook or Twitter. But I mean, I guess that's the way the society is now. Like, we like to post videos about literally everything and record everybody doing everything. So I don't know. I just feel bad. And in terms, to bring it back to the Bulls too, I love the way the young guys are interacting with young fans. Chris Dunn has done a ton already. I've seen Lauri Markkanen before games, a lot before games, signing autographs anywhere and everywhere he can. They've been very, very good on social media. Bobby Portis has started to pop up more on social media as well. So I really like what the young guys are doing in terms of what the Chicago Bulls do right now with Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis. The Chicago Bulls in general take care of their fans. So I'm not disappointed with any player, but I just think there was a frustration level of me seeing these videos and not giving the athletes the fair benefit of the doubt.
Hey, what's up, guys? Name is Nicholas. Just wanted to ask a question that doesn't revolve around this season. Given his numbers and his statistics and everything he's done for the organization, we can say that Artis Gilmore is one of the greatest Bulls to ever play. However, given his statistics and everything he's done for the league, do you think Joakim Noah deserves to get his jersey retired? They haven't retired Gilmore. But do you think they will retire Joakim Noah? I personally think he deserves to get retired just for everything he's done, his leadership, what he's done for the community, and his numbers don't lie. I mean, the kid was a phenomenal player. I hated to see him go the way he did, but I definitely think he belongs up in the rafters. I mean, Dennis Rodman's not even up there. He deserves to be up there. That's my favorite goal ever. But Joakim Noah definitely has my vote. I just want to see where you guys stood on that. Hope all is well. I love listening to the show. That's all I listen to. You guys have replaced my iTunes. I don't listen to music anymore. I look forward to listening to your show every day. So thanks for all the good and hard work, and keep it up.
All right, so Matt, I know Joakim Noah is near and dear to your hearts, as is well a lot of Chicago Bulls fans. You think when it's all said and done, when Joakim Noah is retired, that number 13 is going to be hanging in the rafters?
I don't know, man. It's hard to say. Like, obviously, I mean, through a sentimental lens, I would like to say, yeah, they should hang Joe's number in the rafters. I mean, he was the heart and soul of a team that brought Bulls Nation back to life because, you know, he kind of bridged the Baby Bulls and the Derrick Rose Bulls. And even as a rookie, was loud and opinionated and, you know, standing up to veteran guys like Oakley, who, you know, old age Oakley, who was on some of those, you know, mid-2000s Bulls teams. Joakim was an all-star. Joakim was a defensive player of the year caliber guy, actually winning the award in one of those seasons. He was, you know, in top five in MVP voting in a year when the Bulls were, again, missing out on large chunks of the season with no Derrick Rose. He had some great years.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. I mean, what's so good about Cleveland?
Are they collectively enough of a resume to put him in the rafters? I mean, you think about, this team does not have a lot of retired numbers. You got Sloan, you got Love, you got MJ, you got Pip. That's it. Now, I would say, and I think that voicemail points out that, you know, even Artis Gilmore, who had some great years with the Bulls and is arguably considered, you know, borderline top 50 players of all time, is not up there. Maybe he should be before Joakim is. I would also say that, and maybe this is my personal bias coming forward here, even more so of a Joakim fan as I am a Dennis Rodman fan. Yeah, he only played three seasons with the Bulls, but they won the title all three of those years. And Dennis Rodman was an elite rebounder, an elite defender, and a big reason for the Bulls winning those three titles. So, I mean, if they retire Joakim's jersey before they retire Rodman's, as much as I love Joakim, I think that they'd be getting that back.
I agree with you, and I think there's a lot of players that would be, their numbers would be retired before Joakim's. Not to say that Joakim didn't, you know, wasn't important to what the Bulls did, especially with Rose here, but like I said, Rose is another one that you could throw on that list before Joakim Noah. And like you said, it's kind of weird that there's only a handful of numbers really retired by the Chicago Bulls. And you think about the history with this franchise and how it's historic to the NBA. And I feel like the way the Bulls take that on, they're serious about when they do things such as retiring numbers or honoring somebody. So I wouldn't mind seeing it, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think you're more likely to see Derrick Rose's number get retired, Artis Gilmore, like we had said, somebody like Dennis Rodman even getting his number retired before any of those other guys. So I wouldn't, I mean.
Here's a question. Who do you think is more deserving, Joakim or D. Rose?
Derrick Rose.
You think so?
Yeah, Derrick Rose. He won the MVP. Like, I brought that conversation up about the Butler versus Rose conversation. Like,
right.
The MVP trumps everything. Like, you win an MVP, especially at the age that Derrick Rose won the MVP, and I'm not using any of his injuries against him here. So take that MVP season and what he did in terms of driving this team to playoff contention year after year, and if the injuries wouldn't have happened, no. But without a doubt, I think I honestly think too, when Derrick Rose is set and done, maybe 3 to 5 years down the road after that, they'll retire Derrick Rose's number one, because that MVP MVP season was special.
I don't know about that, man.
Really? Why?
Yeah, that MVP season was special. But you think the Bulls are going to rush to retire Rose's number?
I don't think they're going to rush. Well, how long do they wait? To retire a number after a guy.
You said 3 to 5
after
years.
After he retires.
Derrick Rose might still be trying to...
After he retires. Yes.
I still, honestly, I'd be surprised if they do. I, again, I'm not knocking Derrick Rose MVP season, age 22, youngest MVP ever. It was special. It was amazing. I loved watching every second of it. But does one MVP season grant you a retired number in the rafters? I don't know about that. To me, that's not a guarantee.
Yeah, that's true, especially hanging up against guys like Michael Jordan. I mean,
Steve Nash won a couple of MVPs while he was with the Phoenix Suns, who never won a title. You think the Phoenix Suns are going to retire Steve Nash's number?
Well, they should.
All right. Well, if you say so.
Derrick Rose, though, such a polarizing figure in this city and in the NBA. I'm curious. I think that's one that I kind of just like raise my hands up and I'm like, I don't know. Like, three-time All-Star, 2008, 2009 All-Rookie Team, 2008, 2009 Rookie of the Year, 2010, 2011 first team All-NBA, and then obviously the MVP season. Three seasons where he scored 20 or more points and had four more total rebounds and seven or more assists.
Yeah, but I mean, like Jordan, those stats you're cranking out right now, they're good. They're not bad, but they're not retire your jersey worthy, in my opinion.
True.
Those are pedestrian numbers, and I don't mean pedestrian as like, oh, you're a mid-level role player coming off the bench on a middling team, but you're talking about retiring a number. To me, a few seasons averaging 20 points, that doesn't cut it. That does not cut it.
Maybe maybe a youngest MVP ever banner hanging in the, like, not a retired number, but like honoring that.
All right, come on. Okay. Well, so, and then like, would you give Joakim a banner for a defensive player of the year season? I mean, come on. What is the criteria here?
I don't know. I'm sitting here trying to help Derrick Rose fans not, like, you know, I don't know, blow up listening to this podcast when they hear that.
Well, they can blow up if they want to blow up, but I'm sorry. I don't see those numbers meaning a retired jersey. I just don't.
I don't know. That would be the one interesting one, but if we're going to bring it back to, like, Joakim Noah, like, if Derrick Rose's jersey number is not retired, then there's no way Joakim Noah's jersey is getting retired.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But I would say that if they think that Derrick Rose deserves a retired number in the rafters, Joakim deserves one just as much, if not more so.
I agree. I'll agree with that. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We're doing a giveaway, giving away a autographed Kirk Heinrich 8x10 framed and plaqued picture. It's awesome. All you have to do is go to Twitter at Locked On Bulls, retweet us, and follow us for your automatic entry to win. We're going to pull that winner on Friday and announce it on the show on Friday. So that is going to be something you're going to want to win. So go over to Twitter at Locked On Bulls, retweet and follow us, and you'll be entered to win. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. New text and voicemail line. This is what our loaded show was just filled with. Make sure you continue to send those voicemails and texts, and we love those, at 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Interact with us while you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out. Have a wonderful day, Bulls Nation.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck, and on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChyBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.